Whitney Tilson is well known in the investment world. He founded and ran numerous investment partnerships and mutual funds and other enterprises. He's also been the author of investment books like More Mortgage Meltdown, 6 Ways to Profit in These Bad Times, which was published in 2009. And I got to tell you, if you're going to write a book about mortgage meltdown and how to invest in them, that's the year to have done it. He was also one of the authors of Poor Charlie's Almanac, the definitive book on Berkshire Hathaway's Vice Chairman Charlie Munger. Whitney joins us today from Manhattan. He lives there with his wife and daughters, and he's the past chairman of the Manhattan chapter of the Young Presidents Organization. Hey, Whitney, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve.
You and I have never met before, but I feel like I know you because somehow you always get to ask a question at the Berkshire meeting, and that's not an easy thing to do. So tell us really quickly how you managed to get your questions. I think it was 8 out of the last 15. That's impossible.
Yes. Actually, I went back and counted. CNBC has actually posted an archive now that Buffett provided of all the past meetings going back about 20 years. I just attended my 21st consecutive Berkshire meeting, and it's actually 9. Plus, my wife asked one in 2013. And so it was easier in the old days. You know, anyone who wanted to could ask a question, and then the meeting exploded and 40,000 people come. And now you need to be a little lucky and a little clever. They have microphones throughout the auditorium of the convention center where it's held, but all the hardcore junkies go to the microphones near where they're sitting, which is as close to Buffett and Munger as possible. And what I do is I just sneak up to the overflow room where you can watch the meeting and Buffett and Munger on a large screen. And none of the junkies go up there. So usually there are only maybe 5 people at the lottery that they have at the microphone. And you have to be in the top 2 in order to get your question asked. Mm-hmm. And so I've gotten lucky a few times by just going to the overflow room.
Yeah. You know, there are strategies too for getting a seat pretty close. I'm not going to disclose my strategy at all, but.
Yeah. Like get up at 4 in the morning. It's easy.
there's other elements in that, but that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Nevertheless, yeah, so you have to have some strategies if you're kind of competing against 40,000 other people. They're not hard. It's like investing, you know, it's simple, but it's not easy, right?
So, correct.
All right. So look, from what I've read about you, especially in the Lawrence Cunningham book that we've been discussing in this series, you say that Buffett has been a role model and influenced your life far beyond investing. He helped you think about being a better person and has made you happier and more successful outside the world of investing. I think many of us feel that way. I've had my own experience as I was wandering in the wilderness of the big brokerage firms early in my career with no values-oriented guidance until I started reading Buffett and everything changed. So tell us a little bit about your experience.
It probably, the way you describe your experience is similar to mine. I discovered investing a few years after I graduated from Harvard Business School in the mid-90s because it was the first time I ever had a few thousand dollars in my bank account in my life. You know, my parents were teachers and I always had undergrad debt and then business school debt. And as an undergraduate at Harvard, I knew Bill Ackman, who launched one of the early hedge funds. And so I had my first few thousand dollars in my bank account. I called him up and said, Bill, I want to invest this. What do you suggest? And he gave me the best advice anyone has ever given me, which is go read all of Warren Buffett's annual letters and then stop. You don't need to read anything else. And so I did. It resonated with me. A couple years later, I started going out to Berkshire meetings. I haven't missed one since. And Buffett and Munger have really taught me the investing business. I launched my own hedge fund in 1999, ran that for almost 19 years before closing it last fall. I'm now in the teaching investing business.
Right.
But as I reflect back on 2 decades, Buffett and Munger have profoundly influenced me as an investor and taught me, you know, how to think about investing sensibly. But now that I'm no longer managing anyone else's money, I look back and see that they've really influenced me as in my development as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk about that in a moment, but I want to delve into this a little bit deeper. So, okay, he could have told you to read the annual reports of anybody he respected. He, of course, talked about Buffett's reports. What was it initially, do you think, in those reports that changed things for you?
Well, from an investing perspective, I, like many people, keep in mind, this was in the late 1990s. We were more than a dozen years into a bull market. And just like today, there was all sorts of foolishness. And I was a young guy. And instead of Bitcoin, the foolishness of today, there was the internet stocks back then.
Right.
And so I was speculating foolishly and actually, worst of all, making some money doing it, which was teaching me all of the wrong lessons that would have ultimately destroyed me, just like those who are speculating Bitcoin will be destroyed today.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I read Buffett's approach and understanding the fundamentals of calculating intrinsic value as if you were buying the entire company, not just trading shares of stock, then having a margin of safety, and just being very comfortable, just ignoring all the crazes and fads and what Wall Street was pumping, and just stick to your knitting, only make a handful of decisions, only when you really have an edge and high quality companies.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, I grew up, you know, my parents were both teachers and they knew how to squeeze a dollar. And, you know, we always shopped at secondhand stores, et cetera. So the concept of buying a dollar bill for 50 cents just resonated with me.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned in one of your articles of the Buffett idea of a punch card with 20 potential places to punch.
Yes, you get 20 investment decisions in a lifetime is the concept.
Yes, that's the concept. So take us through that a little bit.
Well, the idea is, and by the way, I don't know if anyone has ever really done this. Buffett has made thousands of investments in his life.
Yeah.
Back in the early days, he would, you know, buy crummy little companies like Berkshire Hathaway, trading at a discount to liquidation, or maybe at 2x earnings, they'd run up to 3x earnings, and he'd sell them and buy another stock trading at 2x earnings. And he did very well at that for the better part of two decades. So the concept, though, is a sound one, which is particularly in the U.S. market, particularly today, 9 years into a bull market, there aren't a lot of bargains lying around. And so you need to be very patient, very disciplined, and only invest when you really have an edge. And these days, you know, it was easy in late 08, early 09. You could throw a dart and hit anything and it was cheap. But today it's exactly the opposite. So it means you should only invest when you have super high conviction, when you really have an edge, when you're certain the market has made a mistake. And that means you make very few investments.
Mm.
Buffett talks about 20 in a lifetime. That's how you should think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you only have so many choices, every choice really matters, as opposed to just kind of throwing money at a lot of things because you heard a good idea or someone told you about something and it happens to be working at the moment. Also, along with some of these ideas, like with Bitcoin, there's always about, you know, this person who doesn't really know much about anything, but he bought a bunch of Bitcoin when it was worth next to nothing. And now he's a gazillionaire. And that just gets your animal spirits, you know, rising. It's like, well, if that guy can do it, I can do it.
Right. What you have to understand there is that what's going on is a pump and dump scheme where the insiders created this nonsense, this worthless nonsense. They traded it amongst themselves at ever higher prices, and then they suckered in the general public who were drawn in by the enormous fortunes that the early people had made. This is what bucket shops do. This is what the movie The Wolf of Wall Street was about. It's a pump and dump scheme.
Beware of a good story, too. A story that you can really understand and, you know, has
merit.
Yeah. I mean,
the best promotions and frauds and bubbles are always rooted in something that actually makes sense. Back when I first started investing, the internet bubble, everyone said, oh, the internet is the future. And that turned out to be true. The internet has changed the world, but that didn't prevent every single one of those stocks from going down 80 to 100%. In the same way, the blockchain is real. That's a very useful technology. But that doesn't mean these 1,700 cryptocurrencies that all these scammers have created and are pumping in their initial coin offerings are going to do anything but go not to zero. The junky ones will go to zero. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin will retain some value because criminals use it as a method of transaction.
So it reminds me of the story of the railroads back in the 19th century. They were, you know, revolutionary. They were going to change America, but the fortunes were lost trying to figure out which railroads were going to be the most successful ones.
Sure.
And really, mostly only in hindsight did people realize, you know, which ones had enough merit or capital or whatever it was to succeed. I think we're seeing that right now. We know about the FANG stocks, you know, the Facebooks and the Netflixes and all of those, but we know about those in hindsight.
Yeah, although I actually own some of the FANG stocks, and do not put them in the same category, because the FANG stocks, by and large, most of them are in winner-take-all businesses and have won and will not be displaced and are generating unbelievable cash flows and have business models. Facebook and Google, I think, have the two best business models ever in the history of the world, because their business models effectively are, they have no inventory, they can expand into globally. Mm-hmm. Facebook has 2.2 billion people who check Facebook at least once a month. Two-thirds of them check Facebook at least once a day. There are obvious network effects. I mean, imagine someone else is going to come along and, you know, obviously every new person on Earth who joins a social network to connect with friends and family is going to join the social network that has all their friends and family already on it, sure. i.e. Facebook. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to the extent, you know, people, younger people are switching to Instagram, well, hello, that's already owned by Facebook. So, yeah. You know, that's quite different.
Well, what I was saying was knowing which were going to be the future FANG stocks.
Yes.
That's what I was talking about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. It's obvious in hindsight.
Yes.
Because your theory about, you know, winner take all, okay, they've won. Now you can decide to glom onto them or not. But I'm talking about early in the process, very difficult.
Yeah, because what you want to do, of course, is find these stocks before they have the better part of $1 trillion market cap. Yeah. And, you know, shame on me for not being open-minded enough, for example, to follow Google, because I looked at Google when it IPO'd and I saw history where Alta Vista came in, then Netflix displaced them, then Yahoo displaced them, and now Google displaced Yahoo. So I sort of thought, it's pretty likely that someone's going to come along and displace Google. And that may well have happened. But at a certain point, Google, you know, achieved enough of a sort of flywheel effect and virtuous cycle that it too became a winner-take-all business. And that should have been clear to me, you know, at least five years ago. And I didn't do the work.
You know, I'm going to give you a pass on that. I'm going to tell you why. Because at last year's Berkshire Hathaway meeting, Buffett himself said Geico was advertising on Google and he saw what was going on there.
Right.
And he missed it. So I give you a pass on that one. Not that my giving you a pass matters in your life, but you got a pass from me.
Well, yeah. Yes. I mean, look, Buffett's an 87-year-old guy and I sort of understand him who's never invested in tech stocks, but I'm a younger guy and
you should have known better.
I should have been able to figure it out. So okay. I'm not giving myself a pass, but I appreciate it.
Okay. My guest is Whitney Tilson. He's a well-known investment advisor, former hedge fund manager. And hey, Whitney, I want to ask you, you wrote this in the Lawrence Cunningham book, which it's called Warren Buffett Shareholder, Stories from Inside the Berkshire Hathaway Annual Meeting. You say value investing is like a religion. It has a revered founder, Ben Graham, a pope, Warren Buffett, a senior cardinal, Charlie Munger. It has an Old Testament, which is the book Security Analysis. It has a New Testament, the book entitled The Intelligent Investor. It has a set of values, which is kindness and integrity. It has passionate disciples who studied the historical text and carefully analyzed new teachings. It has gatherings of the type of a Mecca-type gathering with a shareholder meeting in Omaha, and really the obligation to make the pilgrimage at least once in your life if you're a shareholder. That was terrific stuff. I think you left out a couple, and I'm going to tell you what they are right now. This religion also allows you to take communion, which is to eat and enjoy See's candies, right?
Yes, agreed, and wash it down with a cherry Coke.
There you go. And very unreligion-like, there's always one thing you have to say at the end of anything like that, and is, don't forget to get your car insurance at Geico.
Right, and Buffett always adds, your engagement ring at Borsheim's and your furniture at Nebraska Furniture Mart.
There you go. I don't really know any kind of religious text that has a commercial at the end, but when you're at the meeting, you know, Buffett's relentless talking about that, and he's got no shame when it comes to pitching the companies that are in his book. I understand that you're not in the investment business anymore. You're now in the teaching business. We've got about a minute and a half left. Please tell us about that.
Sure. I converted Case Capital, closed that after 19 years almost, and open up Case Learning, and to try and teach the next generation of investors, both about what I learned in what I call two decades in the trenches, which is how to become a better investor and make more money on the investment side, both by finding great stocks, but also avoiding value traps, becoming a better portfolio manager, better controlling the behavioral finance, the emotional aspects of investing. It's a comprehensive 3-day course. And then the other piece of it, though, is just because you're a good cook doesn't mean you should open a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of young people, you know, they're having success investing and they want to start their own fund. And there's a whole entrepreneurial side of the business mm-hmm. about, you know, should you try to launch your own fund? If you do, you have to pick a prime broker and a whole bunch of other service providers. You set redemption terms, et cetera. And then, you know, once you launch your fund, I launched with $1 million out of my bedroom. Then how do you build it? How do you make a name for yourself? How do you raise money? Because that's really hard when there are 8,000 other hedge funds out there. So that's the core of what we do. We've got a couple other little programs, a conference on short selling, which is something I did for 15 years, that kind of thing. But all the information about this is at caselearning.com.
Okay. Does this take place in New York or is this an online program? How do you access it?
Yeah. Right now it's all in person. We've done 3 of these 4-day programs, now going to be a 5-day program. We're adding a day on an advanced seminar on short selling. So there's a 3-day investing boot camp, 1-day seminar on how to launch and build an investment fund, and 1-day on seminar on short selling. We're doing it in New York again in June, taking it to London in July. Beautiful. There's been enormous interest in this all over the world. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to do, you know, half in New York and half in various cities around the world going forward.
And to find out more about it, what's the website?
Yeah, the website is K-A-S-E, caselearning.com.
Very good. My guest, Whitney Tilson, Buffett O-File, I think you can say along with me. If you have any question about what we just discussed, you know, ask us, go online to stevepomerantz.com. Ask us anything you like. We love your questions. That's stevepomerantz.com. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly update. This is where we send you weekly commentaries and our interviews straight to your inbox. You can pick and choose whatever segment you may like. You can read the transcripts, you can read a summary, or you can listen to just that segment. And of course, you can listen to the whole show. Whitney, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Steve.